We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. I'd like to thank you for tuning in to another episode. This podcast is made possible by a generous donation from the What Are You Doing With Your Life Foundation. So we'd like to thank them for all their generous support, and as well as the generous support from loyal viewers like you, who continue to not only tune in and make all this possible, but some of you even give us a little bit of money over at patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff. And if you'd like to join the few who do that, feel free to jump on over and chuck a little coin my way. I wouldn't mind it at all. This episode, of course, wouldn't be possible without some of our major sponsors. This episode's major sponsor is World Origami Day, a day that we honour the ancient Japanese art of folding and the modern Australian art of folding things until they really small and they stop taking up so much damn space. It's not just paper. Oh no, it's more than that. It's a philosophy. If something's too big, too messy, too emotional, just fold it smaller and smaller. Keep folding. Never stop folding until it completely disappears. Housing affordability? With a big enough sheet of paper, you can fold a whole new house. The climate crisis? Don't worry about it. Fold it away. Extinct animals? Just fold it again. Rising poverty? Fold it. Fold it so tight and compact it down until your folds compact in upon themselves and make a black hole. And then, when you've got that black hole, you can just throw all your troubles into it and be done with them forever. Forget about them. Never worry about them again. Thank you, World Origami Day. Because some things are easier to manage once you flatten them completely. But of course, guys, none of this would really be possible without my live shows. And for those of you who came out to Mildura, I'd like to thank you for that. That was a really fun show. Brand new festival, it's always a good time to check out a new festival if you get the opportunity. But I do have some upcoming shows. So I've got my stand-up and storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, playing in Albury and in Canberra. Albury on November 21st, Canberra as part of the Canberra Fringe Festival on November 22nd. And that should be a fun way to see the year out. I don't see me doing any more shows until next year, which point I start debuting my brand new show, which I'm very excited to bring you all. So the first place, there's like a little mini festival, like a festival of like work in progress shows in Bendigo. I'll be performing on January 16th. I'll be performing my brand new show, Jokes About the Time That I Got Detained in America and Other Stories, which I will then be bringing to Adelaide Fringe from March 10th to March 15th, and the Melbourne International Comedy Festival from March 26th until April 19th. So almost the whole festival I am doing. Thursday to Monday, so Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, those are the days that I'll be available every week of the festival. So if you're free, if you're in the city, if you want to come and check out something new, do come and check out Jokes About the Time That I Got Detained in America and Other Stories. Until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So let's get into the headlines. The 50th anniversary of Gough Whitlam's dismissal just passed, and Anthony Albanese said that the act was not a constitutional crisis, but a calculated plot to remove a democratically elected government via partisan ambush. And while I do agree with him for the most part on that front, I was just kind of surprised to watch them hail Whitlam's legacy of ambition and courage, only to then politely recommit to incrementalism and cowardice. Just felt philosophically inconsistent. Although the anniversary was marked by Labor unveiling a government that would be so ineffective, nobody would consider it a threat and feel they needed to remove it from power. So I guess they have learned from the past. ChatGPT came up with a Game of Thrones sequel idea, and now a judge is letting George R.R. Martin sue the company for copyright infringement. And normally, I would be all for suing ChatGPT or any of these sort of AI companies for ripping off somebody's work. But to be honest with you, at this point, I'm just glad to hear that someone, anyone, is working on Winds of Winter. Come on, George! The Victorian Parliament finally voted to enact a statewide treaty with its First Peoples. This has led to record levels of awkward dancing all over the state as white people have blasted Yothu Yindi's treaty and tried to sort of mumble over and through the bits of the Yolngu Mathur language that are in the song. Did I have to Google that in order to know what language it was? You betcha! But that's how it is, all over the state, but with dancing. Within this, there's going to sit a First Peoples Assembly, a permanent truth-telling body, and an accountability commission. With this new First Peoples Assembly formed, Parliament is actually very excited, and they've welcomed having someone to be able to point the complaints of their constituents to so they can continue ignoring them. But now, more efficiently and officially. Critics have warned the treaty could open the floodgate to reconciliation, which could set a dangerous precedent for governments because they're not used to, like, actually finishing things or doing things that are really good for the people. Adani has denied claims it sold coal to its related companies at below market prices, leading to Queensland missing out on hundreds of millions in royalties. I think it's pretty clear that the word sold was doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence. I feel like this is more like a fire sale, if anything, where Adani gets the coal at discount prices and the world gets to light on fire. Obviously, given how little profit Adani is making from our coal, Queensland officials have rushed to give them further subsidies because they wouldn't want them to leave. The Liberal Party's review into its historic loss at the May federal election will not recommend a rigid quota system, according to four sources that were familiar with the draft report, but not sanctioned to speak about it publicly. Sources claim that they insist the party doesn't need quotas, as mediocrity still works fine for men, and if women can't achieve the same levels of mediocrity as men, well, that's on them. They will instead achieve much-needed balance through other initiatives, like a nicer Bring Your Wife to Parliament Day, you know, something cute. The review found the only thing stopping more women from getting involved with the party is every single thing about the party. Avengers actor Jeremy Renner has denied allegations leveled against him by filmmaker Yi Zhao after she accused him of sending sexually explicit photos of himself and threatening to call ICE when she confronted him about his behaviour. And I cannot say for sure if Renner took part in this behaviour, but there has been some recent Avengers Doomsday plot leaks which contain a plotline where Hawkeye was sending dick pics and threatening to call ICE on Sue Storm after she entered the MCU through, quote, illegal interdimensional channels. And look, I just feel like maybe there's a little bit of art reflecting life there. Veteran radio presenter and national ear infection John Laws has died at the age of 90 due to an ear infection and an overdose of irony. Laws' funeral is expected to be sponsored by Valvoline, Qantas, Optus, Foxtel, Mirvac, and some of the major banks. But to stick to the spirit of Laws' radio career, please don't tell anyone that he's getting the money. As a show of respect, radio stations the nation over will observe a minute of sponsored content. A genetically modified disease-resistant Australian banana could help prevent a global crop collapse. The fruit, named QCAV4, is very appealing as it is resistant to disease and decay. Although, I will say it is yet to be tested on moral convictions on a global scale. Let's be honest. Previous bananas have failed majorly in this sense, being the center of a number of questionable actions, mostly in South America. And you hate to see a good banana slip. In tribute to this new banana, the ABC will actually reboot its old Bananas in Pyjamas TV show for a new generation. They will, of course, be retitling it Bananas in Lab Coats, though I must warn you, it's a sort of classic, darker, grittier reboot where B1 and B2 are sort of dying of crop collapse, and in order to save themselves, they take a bunch of other fruits hostage in order to create a sort of Frankenstein's fruit salad of disease-resistant bananas. The ATO has awarded private debt collector Receivers Corp more than $42 million in contracts as part of a hard-edged campaign to pursue some taxpayers, including welfare recipients. I don't want you to worry though, the ATO promises that Receiver Corp will only chase debts of those who can least afford a lawyer. So, whew, problem solved. The ATO has assured the public Receiver Corp will treat taxpayers with the kind of respectful, gentle approach to debt collection that they have come to expect from the ATO, starting with mild threats and ending in existential dread. The government has defended paying a private company $42 million to harass poor people as classic Australian efficiency. And I can see what they mean. And that's it for the headlines, guys. We're going to get into the bigger news now, starting with Peace Prize News. Now, long-time listeners of this podcast will know the various Nobel Prizes, including the Peace Prize, are, and this is 100% true if you haven't heard it before, a reputation laundering trick put in place by dynamite inventor Alfred Nobel after the premature release of his eulogy had the headline that said, "The Merchant of Death is dead." This was back when newspapers weren't afraid to call out a dead man for the shitty life that he lived. The way papers are going now, when Jeff Bezos dies, his eulogy will simply read, "Jeff Bezos, job creator and man with full head of hair, dies tragically young at age 30. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to any of us that when they needed to clear the reputations of two terrible international figures at the same time, that FIFA president Gianni Infantino announced the creation of the FIFA Peace Prize, an award honoring exceptional actions for peace, such as not questioning how Qatar got the World Cup, letting Saudi Arabia host a women's tournament, bribery, not mentioning slave labor or oppression, and of course, collusion, because nothing brings people together like collusion. World Cup fans celebrated the announcement in the traditional way by setting stadiums on fire, tipping over buses, and firing flares from their asses. In a move that I would go so far as to describe as courageously self-unaware, the organisation, best known for corruption scandals, bribery, and occasional state-level unrest, will now honour contributions to peace. More specifically, the award will be handed out just before the World Cup draw and aims to recognise exceptional actions for peace. According to FIFA, an organisation best known for both boosting and destroying entire nations in the same fiscal year. Critics say the move is as desperate and obvious as the Liberal Party saying gas is an essential part of the future of Australia's energy supply, as FIFA attempts to rebrand its own image. Infantino disregarded those critics, insisting peace has always been part of our mission, right after profit, power, and plausible deniability. You know, the four P's of soccer. We're all familiar with them. There's peace, profit, power, and plausible deniability. I can just rattle them off the top of my head. Infantino, who, it will surprise nobody to learn, has a close relationship with President Donald Trump, would not tip his hand when asked if Trump will be the first recipient of the award, simply saying, "On the 5th of December, you will see," and we will see, Infantino, we will see. We will see you handing a phony trophy to your mate, Donald Trump. FIFA confirmed the Peace Prize winner will be chosen using the same transparent process as the World Cup bidding. so we can all rest assured that we'll only go to whoever is the most willing to pay the most money and turn the other cheek until they are going ass to ass, like the end of Requiem for a Dream. Spoiler alert, guys, sorry. On a positive note, the Peace Prize ceremony should be mercifully short, as there isn't really any other contenders for it. It's going to be Trump all the way. Which is good, as if it went into overtime, it'd have to end in like a penalty shootout between ethics and optics. And I gotta tell you, neither of them really has what it takes to go the distance. When questioned on their qualifications, Infantino insisted FIFA was perfectly placed to promote peace, citing its long history of sparking riots every 4 years. It's like when police hire a criminal to catch a criminal, you know what I mean? Sometimes it takes a thief to recognize a thief, and sometimes it takes someone who is consistently destroying peace to know when someone is avoiding destroying peace. Makes sense to me. So, to summarize, that story again. Too long, didn't read? Here we go. The man who took a bribe from Qatar is responsible for corruption, scandals, bribery, and occasional state-level unrest, overlooks human rights violations, and has been responsible for sparking riots every 4 years, is likely to be given a peace prize by an organization who took a bribe from Qatar, is responsible for corruption, scandals, bribery, and occasional state-level unrest, overlooks human rights violations, and has been responsible for sparking riots every 4 years. Moving on now to deserving poor news. Australia has many myths in its long and storied history. There's the rainbow serpent, Tiddlywink the frog, the story about how the birds got their colours, and a favourite of your drunkest uncle is the myth of the dole bludger and the undeserving poor. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to any of us that pay attention to the poor that the government wants to create powers to strip fugitives of welfare payments. Good, I hear you cry, screaming at the screen from the future. They are criminals. Why should the taxpayer support them? But you, I respond here from in the past, you don't hesitate to support cops receiving pay while they're being investigated, do you? Suddenly I smell hypocrisy. Maybe it is that you need more details in order to understand why you're wrong on this one. More specifically, this would apply to fugitives wanted for some of the most serious crimes and sexual offences. And good again, I hear you cry again from the future, interrupting me one more time. But you're only forcing me to do the same bit back at you. And again, cops are notorious for these kinds of crimes. In fact, in 2024, data released by The Force showed that sexual assault, intentionally causing injury, recklessly causing injury, and unlawful assault were the most common charges in cases involving police. So don't make me do this bit again. These powers come from an amendment to a Social Security bill, which was tabled in the lower house, which sought to establish a compensation scheme for people affected by unlawful income appropriation, where entitlements were miscalculated from averaging incomes. Think about it as robo-debt, but if it was people instead of robots who did the fucking up. So, you know, just like a slower robo-debt, really. The bill includes some positive reforms to debt waivers, which, to be honest, are long overdue measures, such as offering up to $600 in compensation to around 3 million people affected by the unlawful Centrelink debt recovery scheme. Which is great, guys, it's great. For once, people on welfare are having something good happen to them instead of having something bad imposed on them. However, this last-minute amendment was introduced by the government after the inquiries into the legislation had concluded, and so did not receive proper scrutiny by Parliament. And guys, that's bad. That's real bad. They're trying to get us to eat a big old turd by covering it in ice cream and calling it dessert. Why can't people have nice things? The poor people. Why can't they just have nice things for once? For once! The problem, according to critics, is that it denies natural justice and could unintentionally affect innocent people. I don't know, guys. Like, innocent people being cut off from the very support payments that they deserve does sound like business as usual for Centrelink to me. But that's just me. So, now the bill intended to deliver compensation to people slapped with unlawful welfare debts would also grant the government power to stop welfare payments for people subject to outstanding arrest warrants for serious offences, allowing the government to cancel someone's payment based on advice from a senior person in the police without a conviction. And if there is someone that we can trust to be respectful of the poor and the downtrodden, it's definitely famously tolerant, respectful and supportive of other people who aren't them, the police. I can't think of a single incident of police abusing their power on, say, the homeless, for example. As we have already established, they are busy recklessly causing injury and unlawful assault in other places. Call me old-fashioned, but I subscribe to a couple of outdated and radical takes, including police should not have any involvement in determining someone's social security entitlement. That feels like a big one, especially as this amendment would allow this overreach to occur even in the absence of proper judicial processes. Small compensation payments to people wronged by Centrelink is the delicious cheese that they're dangling in front of us to distract us long enough that we don't see the steel trap snapping down around us. BAM! And I don't like that. Instead of helping the poor, the government has quietly embedded a new punishment, like a Kinder Surprise where all the toys are rusty knives and poison. This was done without debate or scrutiny, pitching the idea of cutting off someone's Centrelink payment simply because a warrant exists for their arrest, with no conviction, no day in court, no presumption of innocence, an allegation suddenly becomes grounds for destitution. That's a real weird choice, just immediately turning to stripping them of the things that make them human: shelter, security, and family support. This is the kind of thing that sounds good to centrist cowards who get off on the idea of punishing the wicked with no eye to nuance. But guilty or not, when you back someone into a corner, sometimes they do desperate things. How has this government not learned from supermarkets? What did they do? They raised prices, and then we raised the amount of stealing. Turns out, people with nothing left to lose, they have nothing left to lose and might do something unpredictable. And you want us to introduce this to an already unstable relationship between Centrelink recipients and Centrelink workers? I don't think anybody's going to be happy with that. This is going to play out spectacularly bad. In the words of one of Australia's great philosophers, Ned Kelly, "That charge has never been proved against me. And it is held in English law that a man is innocent until proven guilty." Seems to me a common misconception is that a warrant will be out for you only if you've done something wrong. But I'll tell you this, you can have an arrest warrant out on you even if you haven't been charged with anything. The cops might just want to bring you in for questioning or for investigation. Labor's idea seems to be to cut off your welfare based on a warrant alone. No charges, no court dates needed, which is, as we say in Australia, a real dog cunt act. Especially because they issue warrants, but they don't always pursue them. You may be completely unaware that you even have a warrant out against you. Presumption of innocence is the cornerstone of our justice system. I'm getting an update. Certain exceptions may apply, your mileage may vary depending on your gender, identity and race. You have questions, please call one of our consultants who will happily deny any exemptions exist. Okay. Not to mention, Centrelink payments could include payments to support for their kids, who, I don't have to say this, don't have a warrant out for them. But that's just another set of special rules for the poor people, isn't it? Yeah, we love having our own special rules. Even when welfare recipients do struggle with behavioural problems, bureaucratic hoop jumping and the threat of being cut off is never a solution. A lesson that Siegfried and Roy learned the hard way when the lion that they had been making jump through hoops for all of its meals realised it was a fucking lion and could do what it pleased. A 2020 study showed that it was broadly accepted that there is no reliable evidence that quarantining income support payments on its own addresses addiction, helps children, or results in long-term positive change. They should absolutely consider a different pathway. As the great Australian philosopher Ned Kelly once said, it will always pay a rich man to be liberal with the poor and make as little enemies as he can, as he shall find. If the poor is on his side, he shall lose nothing by it. It has been hailed by police as a powerful tool, but slammed by social service organisations and independent senators as a breach of natural justice. A bill that was meant to clean up the wreckage of welfare abuses has now weaponized a process that was supposedly about redress and turned it into a stealth expansion of police power into the social safety net. There is also, of course, concern that communities that are traditionally targeted by police would be further disadvantaged by this amendment, which of course they fucking would, because why wouldn't they? Currently, there is no mechanism for the government or law enforcement to block income support payments when there is a warrant for someone's arrest. The amendment will allow police to request that the Home Affairs Minister issue a notice to the Minister for Social Services requiring welfare payments be ceased. There also appears to be no appeal mechanism, and so the impacts this legislation will have on families may not be resolved once the written notice has been issued. These powers dismiss the presumption of innocence and would disproportionately affect vulnerable families. ACOS Program Director of Social Security Charmaine Crowe said, "We shouldn't be involving police or the Home Affairs Minister in determining someone's entitlement to Social Security, particularly where there has been no conviction before they've gone before a court." SBS reported that it was an unexpected amendment, with neither the Coalition nor the Greens even being aware it was being tabled. You know you're fucked up when the Greens and the Coalition come together to fight you. These guys only have one crossover point on the Venn diagram of their lives, and that is right here, and that is figure out how to stop Labor from fucking something up. This is being opposed by the Greens' social services spokesperson, Penny Allman-Payne, who labelled the move an unacceptable power grab. Crossbench MP Andrew Wilkie said the whole notion of taking income support off anyone in the community simply because they are accused of something is a fundamental breach of natural justice, and it is wrong. Independent Senator Lydia Thorpe, who will attempt to remove the amendment when it is debated in the Senate, called it a shocking attempt to quietly expand police power into the welfare, tax, and workplace relations systems, and said people should be treated as innocent until proven guilty. And then if they're a cop or a politician, they can still be treated as innocent even after they are found guilty. And hey, that's exactly what we said would happen earlier. Much earlier. Like, heaps earlier. Like, Roman Empire earlier. Yeah. Yeah, that's much earlier. The Romans, and let's talk about this, they had a few ideas that don't exactly work today. But the Romans establishing innocent until proven guilty? That is my Roman Empire, buddy. I think about that every fucking day, and I'm glad that we kept it. It was a great idea. Even Liberal Senator Carrie-Anne Little said it was disappointing to see Labor's last-minute amendment after the conclusion of the inquiries. And that was coming from the party that tried to introduce a similar idea themselves when the Turnbull government proposed such a measure in the 2018/19 budget. Unsurprisingly, police have welcomed the amendment, saying it would be a rarely used but powerful tool. And let me just say this clearly for those of you who are still unsure. Police should have no business deciding who gets to eat. As the great philosopher Ned Kelly said, "I have been wronged, and my mother and four or five men lagged innocent, and is my brothers and sisters and my mother not to be pitched also? who have no alternative but to put up with the brutal and cowardly conduct of a parcel of big, ugly, fat-necked, wombat-headed, big-bellied, magpie-legged, narrow-hipped, splore-footed sons of Irish bailiffs or English landlords, known as the Officers of Justice or Victorian Police, who some call honest gentlemen. But I would like to know what business an honest gentleman would have in the police. Ned, we love it. What Ned said here basically makes him the original instigator of ACAB, and we're all for it. We stan a metal-clad king. This is punishment outsourced to Centrelink. It is policing via food, rent, and survival, and the collateral damage is obvious. Parents, children, caregivers, renters, people relying on disability payments, people fleeing violence, people already living on the knife edge of poverty will be the ones that cop it the most. This amendment didn't go through scrutiny. It wasn't debated through the light of day. The community wasn't involved to have a say. It was snuck in, a political ambush on the poorest people in the country. The same government who said never again after robo-debt has decided, maybe one more time. You cannot claim to have learned from systemic cruelty while quietly building the next machine of bureaucratic punishment. This whole system is slowly turning into the welfare to punishment pipeline. We don't have a lot of shared culture in modern Australia, I'll tell you that much. But we certainly have a few sacred cultural battle lines. And I'll tell you this, welfare is the first. Every citizen in this country, regardless of their criminal record, has a right to Centrelink. There is a reason that Ned Kelly and the Eureka Stockade are founding mythologies of this country, or the modern part of this country. Although, I will say 50 odd years of Murdoch propaganda on dole bludgers and the undeserving poor moving to Byron Bay to surf all day on the public dollar has done a deep effect on people in the other direction. It's real proper psychic damage. It's time to decide which mythology that we want to fight for. A spokesperson for the Minister of Social Services, Tanya Plibersek, said dependence would be considered when a decision was being made to cancel welfare payments. If someone is charged with a serious offence like murder, terrorism, or child sexual abuse and is on the run, they should not continue receiving a payment from the government. We need to give these guys the same restrictions that we give to the police who have committed a violent or sexual crime, or politicians who have also abused power and caused the deaths of many or the harm of many others. I think they would think twice then. If you insist on punishing people on welfare, well, we're going to need some kind of trade-off, I think. The easiest and most obvious solution to me is getting rid of mutual obligations. Raise the welfare amount to $500 a week. There is, I'll say, plenty of evidence for the efficacy of unconditional cash transfer programs. You know, no strings attached support, that sort of thing. To put it simply, give people money so that they don't die. Yes, even if you don't like that particular person. But it seems Labour are fans of cruelty and keeping people in poverty for no good reason, and even insisting that services like Workforce Australia, who take millions in government money and fail consistently to put people into work. Latest report was that 90% of the time, despite it literally being their only reason for existing, they failed. And them bullying recipients into terrible jobs so they can get bonuses, I guess that's their other reason for existing. And that may be the one that they feel is more important to them, getting those bonuses, but fuck those guys. Take those millions of dollars that we give to Workforce Australia and such programs, job service providers, just give it directly to the people on welfare instead. It would be much better return on investment if you ask most people. It's time to kill the myth of the undeserving poor. Murdoch papers have been pushing the dole bludger narrative more and more because they need an enemy to turn the working class on, so that they won't turn on the rich instead. But also, They're upset that they have to work to earn money instead of, you know, getting subsidized or funded by the government like the ABC. They've been very bitter about this for a very long time. And then they have turned their anger outwards onto the welfare system as a reflection of the ABC. Moving on now, it is Googly Eye News! The debate about public art is one as old as art. When Grog, the first caveman, painted a landscape of him and his friends hunting a woolly mammoth on a cave wall in the common section, much to the dismay of Ugg, the first art critic, who said the painting was... I wanted to like this. I truly did. When word spread through the cave that Grog had done something different, I thought perhaps we'd get a bold experimentation, maybe even some fresh use of berry juice, but instead, what we have is a rather self-indulgent smear on a perfectly good wall space. It suffers from a total lack of anatomical discipline. 6 legs? Or is that 7 legs? I can't even tell. I lost count after I ran out of fingers. This is no abstraction. This is confusion. This is no subtlety in their strokes. There's no restraint in this paint. 3 stars out of an infinite cosmos. And Ugg wasn't known for making friends around the cave, I'll tell you that much. They very rarely are. But that brings us back to the debate about public art in the modern era. And the latest battleground for the public conscious is over in Mount Gambier, as Amelia Vanderhurst stands accused of damaging a piece of public art titled Cast in Blue by putting googly eyes on it. Take a look, Cast in Blue, you're looking good. I like those fancy eyes you've got there. Whoa. Let me get this right. People are upset. Because when this was first proposed, the city of Mount Gambier would spend $136,000 on Cast in Blue and put it in the center of town. The design received widespread public backlash, with people nicknaming it Blue Blob on social media, and the council voted to stick with the project anyway. Now, personally, I can't give the council too much shit on their choice of art that they want to support, because they gave me a grant to go to Mount Gambier and perform. It wasn't a ton of money, it was nowhere near the amount that Blue Blob got, but hey, you know, They've made their choices about what art they want to support, and I can't complain. Council Chief Executive Sarah Philpott said the debate around the sculpture was a symbol of the conversations public art could start. Well, and look at us, aren't we talking about this piece now? It's a whole town-wide conversation. Seems like it's doing its job. Mount Gambier artist and former Country Arts SA board member Ruth Stevenson said if the work generated discussion and attracted visitors, it was a positive. From what I've read, it's less than 1% of the total budget, and it's a tiny amount of the total spend of what the council does. In which case, I'm just going to put this out there, they could have given me more fucking money, tell you that much. That's less than 1%, $136,000, well, you've given me maybe less than 0.01% of that. I don't know what the maths is on that, but they definitely could have given me a little bit more money. Not only that, I'll tell you this, this was weird. I got a letter. So it's standard. It's not weird. I got a letter requesting if I wanted the mayor to attend my show because I was getting public funding, to which I, of course, said no. Why would I want that? I don't want you to witness the stupidity that you've spent public money on. I don't want an adult in the room being like, well, we shouldn't have picked this. Definitely not. And not only did I reject the mayor coming, I then received a letter confirming that despite me specifically saying, no, don't come to the show, that the mayor would definitely not be coming to my show. Good! What? Yes! I already said no! Like, they just needed to let me know that they definitely wouldn't be coming. This is the mayor saying, you can't fire me, I quit! No, mayor, you're already fired, don't come. The artwork is meant to represent a mythical version of the megafauna that were once found in the southeast, but in the colour of the city's iconic blue lake.
The Limestone Coast was once the home of many species of Australian megafauna, including the Diprotodon. And modern day Australia, as a country, we are still home to a number of very rare megafauna. You may have heard of some of them. There's the big merino, yes, the big boxing crocodile, the big galah, the big cassowary, the big bogan, the big shrimp, the big koala, the big lobster, the big frog, the big rocking horse, and of course, Cairns' famous big colonial Nazi. What are you doing, big colonial Nazi? Why are you making that gesture? That's really strange. Don't do that. Stop it. That big Nazi, frankly, could use not only some googly eyes, but like maybe some googly arms. You know, give him a better range of movement, get in there, attach some other arm options. You know, sort of like a mini-armed Shiva rather than a colonial Nazi. And sure, that would be like cultural appropriation instead of just straight up being a Nazi. But then like Nazism is also cultural appropriation. I think that's German culture. So like, what's worse, that we put a big Nazi up or like a Shiva for no reason at all? Like, they're both bad, but I think one is obviously less worse. Right? So we're going to go with Big Shiva. I've decided. I'll tell you this, I don't know why the locals are so upset about this act of art enhancement. Art vandalism has a rich cultural history in humanity. Most famously, Banksy. You know Banksy. He spray paints things and then people try to steal those designs and sell them separately of him so that he won't get any money for it, but they manage to profit off it and people don't really know what's him and what's not him because people don't really know who he is. And it's a whole thing, right? That's them. But putting googly eyes on things has actually been one of the longest standing forms of art vandalism. There was some of it on the Nathaniel Green Monument in Savannah, Georgia, and a bunch of statues in Bend, Oregon reportedly had googly eyes put on them. So happened so much that the council actually reached out to the media to ask people to please stop doing it. City officials wrote, while the googly eyes placed on the various art pieces around town might give you a chuckle, it costs money to remove them with care and not damage the art. Bringing up the obvious solution that I think we all thought of immediately, well then don't remove them. Keep them on. It's a good old time. Locals love them. One local even said, these googly eyes give me hope to move forward each day, which, given the state of the world at the moment, I guess kind of makes sense, right? Look at what you're doing to the local people, local council. You are removing people's hope to live. And in this day and age, we need all the hope that we can get. And if it hinges on googly eyes, well, we've got some bigger problems and we probably should invest in some better systems of support. But if for now all we have is googly eyes, then I guess we'll take it. And don't take away our googly eyes, please. Oregon locals swiftly jumped on to the googly eyes defense, saying art in the roundabouts is a gift. But after a while, you don't even see it. Unless it's got googly eyes. Hey, now look who's googling. And this just might be a new stage of art presentation. Picasso had his blue period, Georgia O'Keeffe had her flower vaginas period, and Rothko had his fuck it, I'm just gonna paint squares period. But humanity has finally entered a new artistic epoch. Move over, Renaissance, you outdated painting things as they truly are, piece of shit movement. We got googly eyes, baby! Yeah! And they come in all sizes for all pieces of art. One of our megafauna that I did not mention earlier was actually the recipient of some of these googly eyes. The Big Scotsman! No, not Jimmy Barnes. This Big Scotsman is apparently Australia's oldest big megafauna. He's our oldest big thing. And the owner says that this statue has been badly damaged by a group of people known as the Googly Eye Bandits. Dun, dun, dun. Which just tells me that the Home Alone franchise is really struggling to stay relevant. At the beginning, Harry and Marv, they were thieves. They were having a good old time, but they really seem to have fallen off. You know, as the Wet Bandits, they were making a living. They were doing fine. They could afford costumes and gold teeth, right? Then they tried to rebrand as the Sticky Bandits, which is a problematic rebrand even in the anything goes 90s. And possibly is an explanation as to why Donald Trump actually appears in the sequel. He heard that there was a group of people calling themselves the Sticky Bandits, and he rushed to be involved. And now what? Now they're out here calling themselves the Googly Eye Bandits? This doesn't feel like the right pathway for you guys. But at least here in Australia, you won't run into Kevin McAllister. Over in Adelaide, they were hit by a swath of large googly eyes appearing on various advertising signs and statues, such as KFC, the Adelaide Crows headquarters, a Jim's handyman van, and this wonderful Dan Murphy sign. Look at you, Dan. You're looking very suave with those googly eyes. I'm into it. I can get behind this. This is a movement that I can get behind. It's perfect. No notes. Keep doing this, googly eye bandits. I fully approve. And the woman that's getting charged... What's she getting charged for? For partaking in a modern artistic movement? For being fun? She's facing a charge of property damage, even though police estimated the damage was less than $2,500. She could get an arts grant and cover that quite easily. And I'll say this, she didn't damage the art. The council worker who removed the eyes, they damaged the art. Seems that it might not have cost as much to remove if the council staff had removed the eyes using something like a hand steamer instead of a cricket bat. Or if, and hear me out here, if they'd just let them fall off naturally, as they inevitably would have, being left out in the weather. They're pretty shit when they're indoors. They're definitely going to last in a harsh, harsh world. She's out here making a public conversation. As per the council's definition, she's creating art. And now what? We're all talking about it. I'm here, you're listening. She should be getting council funding to go and enhance the art scene in Mount Gambier through the use of googly eyes, not being punished. Moving on now, it is streaming news. After a long delay due to panic over what Trump's tariffs were going to do to the world of global trade, Australia's streaming content creation laws are now in place. And as such, streaming platforms that aren't Stan or the ABC's iView will be required to spend a share of their local revenue on making Australian programs. As mentioned, they were delayed after the federal government took the laws requiring streaming services to produce Australian content off the table due to concerns about how they would interact with Australia's free trade agreement with the United States. But now that we've seen that everybody is getting a tariff no matter what, and we're all fucked no matter what we do. Even the penguins of Heard and McDonald Islands weren't spared tariffs, so they then had to go and cut back on the new live-action adaptation of Pingu that they were working on. Yeah, I bet you didn't know that was happening. But we've entered the fuck it stage, and we're gonna go all out. We're gonna get while the getting's good, which I believe is the official motto of the Trump presidency. The government has confirmed that it will introduce legislation to mandate that any streaming service with more than 1 million Australian subscribers must produce Australian drama, children's, documentary arts, or educational programs. The platforms will have to commit to at least 10% of their local expenditure or 7.5% of revenue on Australian content. So we can expect to see some prices of the streaming services skyrocket in Australia as streaming services try to jettison Australian subscribers en masse. Then if that doesn't work and people still hang on to their subscription services, there will be a commitment to only making the worst TV shows. I don't know, I was looking at which ones they might make, and initially I was going to say they would make a reboot of the Big Brother program, but it literally just happened. Like, they just started it up again on actual TV, so fuck, right? So now there's only a small slope that we need to slide down to get to the actual worst television ever made in Australia. So maybe, I don't know, a remake of Mother and Son. Oh, fuck, they've done that already. They've already remade Neighbours. Amazon made quick work of that. They tried and cancelled it within a year. If Shane Warne was still alive, obviously... they'd have tried to bring back his short-lived talk show, Warnie. But I guess if we're really living in the darkest timeline, they're just going to double down on Sunrise, maybe even give Koshy a new talk show where he co-hosts with an AI version of himself. Ugh. Ugh. Yuck. No thank you. Or if things get really bad and we get real desperate, they're going to give Pauline Hanson money to make more of her Please Explain YouTube series. Sorry to put that image in your head. With the arts industry pressuring the government to safeguard the sector from artificial intelligence, Arts Minister Tony Burke and Communications Minister Annika Wells said the move would help to protect acting jobs. At least until they start using some sort of like Australian-based AI system to write new shows and then use that same AI-based AI system to create AI actors to act in those shows with the AI scripts. So technically they're still Australian content, but now we don't have to pay anybody to make it and they can just reap the benefits. Or we'll hire American actors and force them to do bad Paul Hogan impressions. You know how that goes. The legislating of quotas has made the LNP furious, and a spokesperson was heard saying, well, if we're going to hold up a struggling industry, I thought it was going to be the oil and gas. Saying many of them had already set up contracts within that industry and they didn't want to like start at the bottom of some new industry, some woke arts lefty industry, just so they can get a spare golden parachute in case oil and gas doesn't work out. Industry representatives rushed to put out statements. Disney Plus quickly said that they'd invest in Australian talent as soon as they can find some that didn't move to LA, as there is no industry here. Disney Plus also announced its first new show for the Australian content quota with an exciting new spin-off, Bluey, The Emu War, which I'm really looking forward to be honest. I feel like there's like a whole world out there that we haven't explored beyond Brisbane. And the nice thing is that they have officially committed to filming all future Marvel post-credit scenes in places like Dubbo and small regional towns. Netflix says it might struggle to meet quotas because there are only so many actors who can convincingly portray a traumatised tradie with a dark past, but their executives have promised authentic Australian voices, including some big-name reboots such as Underbelly Tax Time, Neighbours, Housing Crisis Edition, and MasterChef, Nothing Left to Cook Because It's All Underwater Now. Always looking to cut back on spending, executives at Prime Video said that they'll simply dub over existing shows with Australian accents, beginning with The Boys, turning it into The Boys Penrith. Prime Video also confirmed its new drama, Centrelink, will be filmed entirely inside a defunct mental institution so that they can accurately portray the inhumanity of the system. Locally owned streamer Stan said it will show its commitment to local content by rebranding as Struth to better reflect Australia's limited cultural identity. Streaming services have long opposed calls for content quotas, citing increases in already high production costs and arguing the industry may not be able to cope with demand. But the Australian screen industry is celebrating the quotas by ordering 14 new shows about trauma near a beach and at least one new series about a quiet town full of intergenerational trauma. I love Quiet Town Full of Intergenerational Trauma, and I'm looking forward to a new season of it. Streaming services were also concerned that the quotas would force them to actually hire Australians. A fate that they just never thought that they would have to face. Producers said that if they have to, that they will attempt to trigger our cultural cringe by warning international viewers that they may be exposed to real Australian accents, which, ooh, watch out. I'm sure we can get through it. Australian screen industries have challenged this by assuring viewers local stories will be told authentically by the Americans who greenlight them. A spokesperson for the Foxtel Group, which owns streaming platform Binge, and operates subscription TV service Foxtel, said it had been committed to producing Australian dramas and sharing Australian stories with the world for 30 years, which I guess is technically true. It's like kind of true. I give them a little credit for that, but it's only every other element of Australia's life and culture that the Murdochs sell out to international interests, I suppose. They're so committed to creating Australian content that News Corp announced that it has completed the sale of Foxtel to DAZN Group Limited. News Corp hasn't completely abandoned us, don't worry, and it never will because it still maintains a 6% stake in DAZN, and they managed to score themselves a board seat in the deal, so that's nice for them. For context, for those who haven't heard of it, because I certainly hadn't, DAZN is owned by Access Industries, the investment company of billionaire Len Blavatnik, who is commonly considered a Russian oligarch with possible connections to Vladimir Putin. I am compelled to point out that Blavatnik denies connections to Putin and has attempted unsuccessfully to avoid the label of oligarch, preferring the term an individual of advanced wealth and political power. Oligarch is just such an old-fashioned term. There isn't really room for it in today's society of limited amounts of companies owning all the things and then making enough money to influence politics by bribery or old-fashioned ideas, like oligarchs. But even if we can't prove those connections to Russia, well, we know for sure that in early 2025, Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund has brought a minority stake in DAZN, giving the Gulf Kingdom an influential voice in the company. And long-term listeners will remember that Australia's very own sovereign wealth fund has invested in a number of weapons companies recently, to various levels of chagrin. And it seems like this is the right time to get in on the ground floor of what might be a slightly more ethical investment than weapons. That's if you can call investing in more seasons of Neighbours ethical. I can't think of a fate worse for the country. Now that the zone is run by a set of questionable billionaires and Saudi Arabia, seems like we've reached the right amount of profiting from blood money for the wealth fund to at least make an interest in investing. So get on it, guys, and invest locally, not globally. We can get some classic Australian icons to help art wash the Saudi government's reputation, as well as those American comedians who are on the circuit at the moment doing their best. We can bring our own arts, culture and entertainment industry to a global scale that we've never seen before. Unprecedented. And we've come to the end of the episode, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to have a little bit of a listen, or even if you just fell asleep in front of the YouTube video or the podcast, I appreciate that too. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for taking a chance. Thanks for listening. If you know anyone who you think would enjoy this, do feel free to reach out to them. Share the link. Share it around. If you want to support by joining the Patreon, I'd appreciate that. Feel free to go to patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff and sign up. Or you can come out to one of the live shows. It is usually the easiest way to support the show. Plus, you get a fun, full live show, so that's always a good time. Remember, where I'm going to be, where am I going? Canberra, Albury, Bendigo, Adelaide, Melbourne, and more to come down the pipeline. But thank you so much for your time. Thanks for giving me your ears or your eyes, whichever way you've listened to this or watched it. Thank you so much. Goodbye.